Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second? Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 96. A few quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe on whichever platforms you're listening to this on. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. It helps us go up in the rankings and helps us reach more people with this very important message. So thank you in advance for supporting us in that way. And every week I'll be reading a 5-star review that's left by someone. So if you leave a 5-star review, you will be shouted out in an upcoming episode. This week's review is from Al Rehabs. Al said, "It's always inspiring to hear how people have started and fought to progress in real estate. Thank you for sharing their stories." Al, thank you so much for your support and for your review. I truly appreciate it. We also had a conversation in the DM and you let me know that you left a 5-star rating and review. So thank you again. This episode is sponsored by the Bread Real Estate Investing Community. If you're looking for a group of like-minded individuals and exclusive access to experienced real estate investors, look no further. Each month, we have masterclasses that are taught by experienced guest speakers in various areas of real estate 2 times per month. You also have unlimited access to past guest speaker recordings as soon as you join. You also have access to our private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everyone in the community to share resources and also to support one another. Best of all, you can try us out for just $1. That's right, just $1. Click the link below in the show notes or go to blackrealestatedialogue.com to learn more, and I look forward to seeing you there. Looking forward to you checking out this mashup of a previous episode. Can't wait to hear what you think. Without further ado, let's get into it.
Welcome back to the Black Real Estate Dialogue, episode 96, the mashup series. This episode features the Charm City Buyers from episode 19 and Tim K. White from episode 12, and they're both talking about buying back the block. This is going to be a great episode. Tune in, take notes. Here we go.
For sure. And there's a couple of things I'm noticing here. So the first is, wherever you two were, you thought about the possibilities of what could be in the area that you're in or the area that you invested in, which I think is great. And, you know, I think just generally people will be a lot more successful too if they adopt that kind of mentality. Because if we think about it, in our communities, these days around the country especially, change is happening. It has been the last 10 or so years in a lot of Black and brown communities all over the country, but there are other people who come in and they see what it could be. They see what it could be, and, you know, they renovate the homes or they build new development. And we could participate if, of course, we had the knowledge, but if we also had that vision. So I think it's really great. And then secondly, the fact that you took that action in the beginning provided, like you said, provided some cash to support the next move. And I think it's so important that you took that first action, and it kind of, it seems like, you know, things kind of have built from there.
That's a great observation. That's exactly right.
Yeah. It's really important that we see the opportunity and potential in our neighborhoods first, right? I think a lot of times it's really easy to kind of, you know, you get jaded by where you're from sometimes, mm-hmm. to be honest. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, trying to take that outside perspective, or even I think it's really important to like get away and come back. Like whether that means you're going to college and then you actually come back, right? A lot of times we go to college and then never come back. I think that gives you a new perspective on potential and opportunity. And we miss it a lot of times. And that's one of the things that Khalil and I are super passionate about, is sharing our passion for Baltimore, because a lot of times it turns this light bulb on, like, oh yeah, like you're right. Baltimore does have the best restaurants and tons of really great jobs. And there's all these young professionals moving into the city, and there's a lot of shifts happening. And sometimes you just need someone else to plant the seed to really be able to see it and turn on that light. And so we're like all about shouting Baltimore from the rooftops, because not only do we want to make sure the people that are here see what's around them, but also those who are open and willing to add value in the communities in which they invest, we want them here too, right? And we want to make sure that as Baltimore continues to change and shift, we are helping to position people to win. And so when you think about the DCs, the Brooklyns, the Harlems, all these different cities where we as a community of Black and Brown primarily areas weren't in positions of property ownership to be able to really ride that wave like we could have or should have, and we weren't really in positions of power through ownership to be able to dictate what that change looks like. And that's what we spend a lot of our time. That's what 2020 honestly is dedicated to as Baltimore is changing, that we are positioning people and entities and organizations and whomever to be in a successful place or a place of success as Baltimore changes, and they have a say in what that change actually looks like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know you mentioned for that first deal, there was private money involved in seller financing. And those are two hot topics, two things that people seem to are either confused about or want to learn about. So can you talk about how you were able to structure the deal in that way with the private money and the seller financing, and how it all worked out for you?
Yeah, so for the private money, we typically work through, you can either work through debt or equity are the two main returns that a private money lender can capture. But before I even go down that hole, what is a private money lender? It's somebody who you know in your personal network or your professional network who has cash. They're not a professional lender, but they have saved up or have accumulated a certain amount of cash, and they want to deploy it in a way that gives them cash back along with their principal. So it could be a doctor, a lawyer, it could be a family friend, it could be your rich uncle or auntie, whomever. But it's just somebody in your network with cash. And how they convert from just a person with money to a private money lender is that you position them and say, hey, I've got an investment opportunity, or I'm getting into real estate, or I've got a ton of mentors behind me who know this stuff. We want to work together on a house with you. So if you put your cash in, we put our time and our expertise in, we can put this thing back to life, we can stabilize this property, and you can get your return, whether that's, again, debt or equity. So for this deal particularly, it was a debt transaction. We do all of our private money structures with debt. And that person got a return, and they were pretty happy with it. The house cost about 26 grand. The private money lender put up about 15. So the seller financer held about, 14? That's the difference?
Yeah. It was like, 11, it was 10, about, 11. It was like 16 and 8, but it doesn't really, it. Yeah. It doesn't matter that much. The point is that the private lender was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So, was it like five, six years ago?
That private lender was put up some and was able to get an interest return. And then for the seller financing, we asked the question. We were looking at the property. We're like, would you be willing to sell or finance and hold the note? People don't understand how easy it is to really do a lot of these creative strategies. It's really just you asking the question a lot of times. And so we asked if they would sell or finance. They said yes. And so we structured that. So it was a 3-year monthly payment. So we paid off the property in 3 years with the seller financier. So it was really great. And then we were able to just put our funding into the construction.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. And then from there, did you refinance out of that property?
No, we paid it off.
You said you paid it off.
Yeah. So we paid it off in the 3 years. So then we had it free and clear.
Got it. Now houses are selling in that area. A year ago, they were selling for 175. We saw one in the area sell for about 185. I think it was 185 a couple blocks down. Mm-hmm. So it was a great investment. And at the time, bringing up a point that Kiara spoke on earlier, when you're from the area, it's like, no, don't
invest over there.
Yeah, you don't think about that type of stuff. So when I was growing up and listening to Baltimore club music and going down to Paradox and Hammerjacks and things like that.
Yeah.
I remember hearing about this neighborhood and these club songs. Yep. I'm like, no, we're not buying a property over there. But then Kiara took a step back, not being from here, and she said, look, I can see Johns Hopkins from here. I can see, you know, one of the major parks from here. This is absolutely an area where in a short amount of time, the property values are going to go up. And her vision and her ability to really foresee a couple short years later, we bought this in 2013. And the property value has gone up almost five times. For her to see that is just a testament to her ability to spot deals and one of her strengths.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then from there, did you grow your portfolio within that particular neighborhood, or did you target certain neighborhoods? What was the strategy after getting your foot into the Baltimore market?
Yeah, like at that point, we weren't really, we hadn't narrowed down yet. So we were buying properties all over. We were just looking for great deals. So we continued to look for great deals and scoop up really good opportunities. And so we were kind of scattered for a while for our rental properties until kind of fast forward over the last few years or so, we've narrowed down a little bit more and tried to be a little bit more intentional about what it was that we were trying to accomplish and how.
For sure. For sure. And at this point, where does the portfolio stand? Around how many units do you all have in the altogether?
Mm-hmm. So we have about 20 rental units, and then we have like five active rehab projects of our own. Chloe also is like a developer.
Yeah, we provide construction management services where we help others with their projects and bring our team along to make sure that it's done right the first time and mm-hmm. high quality.
Yeah. So we have a bunch of projects going all over the place.
Yeah, we're in control of a lot of development that's happening. Yeah. Which is beautiful. It's great. And it's not something that we do alone. It's not something that we're very modest and humble about it, but we love being able to help other people.
But we're kind of a big deal.
No. Oh, I know. I've been watching.
we love being able to infuse ourselves into people's projects and help them bring them to life.
Yeah.
Do you really think investing in real estate is too expensive? Well, you wrong about that. Presenting a beginner's guide to buying your first out-of-state property, a Black Real Estate Dialogue course. That's right, it's the new course presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue, teaching you how to develop the investor's mindset, the advantages of investing out of state, getting your finances in order, finding the right location, assembling your team, creating financing strategies, how to find and analyze properties, how to find tenants, real-life case studies, and so much more in bonus content.
Oh yeah, did we mention you have lifetime access?
My goodness! If you have dreams of buying a property out of state but have no idea where to start, well, this is the guide for you. Learn the tips from someone with firsthand experience. Are you looking for a community of like-minded individuals and access to experts in real estate?
Yeah.
Are you interested in real estate but need more support and guidance?
You know who it is.
The Black Real Estate Dialogue presents the Real Estate Investing Community. No matter how much or how little real estate experience you have, we've created a community for you because your perspective is important. All right, tell me, where's the number one place where you can do Q&A with experienced guest speakers 2 times per month? How about unlimited access to past guest speakers' recordings? What about a private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everybody in the community to share resources and support each other? Head on over to blackrealestatedialogue.com. That's blackrealestatedialogue.com. It's the real estate investing community presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Come join us today.
So how did you grow your portfolio from there? I know you mentioned, you pursued your master's and then kind of got back into it in 2014. How did you grow to where you are now?
So I guess let's go over the history of it. I guess in 2014, I started doing Airbnb, and 2015, I was just trying to figuring out what I wanted to do. I spent some time just reading books and just educating myself, not just on real estate, but just, what I wanted to do, what I wanted to be in life. I think I was 26 or 27. So 2015 come along, and I was thinking, okay, if I'm still in Huntsville, because I was looking for jobs in California, but the cost of living, everything was out there was just insane to me. So I didn't want to do that, knowing I want to keep a job similar to what I have due to job security and benefits and stuff like that. And the pay didn't really work out there. I wasn't willing to take the risk to lose you know, security that I have in my day job. So I was like, if I'm staying in Huntsville, let's try to invest. So I was looking at properties in early 2015, and one of my good friends told me to, like, hey man, look properties back at home in Jackson. You know, you can buy something for $20,000 and rent it for, you know, $700-$800 a month. And I was like, okay, let me think about that. And at around the same time, I heard about Bigger Pockets, and I listened to a podcast. I cannot remember the episode, but anyway, it was a lady in Baltimore buying houses at $35,000 a pop, you know, fixing them up and, you know, renting them out for like $1,000, $1,200 or so. I'm not sure those are exact numbers, but I was like, okay, I could do that. People are doing this. So anyway, a situation came up where my parents' house, they were still in Jackson. They were, you know, renting it out. My brother was actually staying there when this actually happened, but my brother was about to move. He was about to buy a house, and my parents didn't want to cover the mortgage payment because they still had a mortgage on the house at the time. So I came and said, yeah, I could just buy the house from you guys. So I bought the house that I grew up in. And so one thing that they had, and I didn't know about this, but you know, they had a land contract on the house, which is a rent to own type of situation. Where they were paying, you know, a portion of a rent to the house, but it was really going towards interest or whatever. And that was a lot of times in poor communities, you have those land contracts. So I'm not big on those yet. I don't really go by those rent to own lease options. I don't like them because of that. My parents are in this situation. And most of the time, you know, if you don't pay up, you know, it's easy to get kicked out. Instead of, you know, somebody doing a foreclosure, they can just do an eviction on somebody that's in the land contract. So anyway, long as I bought the house that I grew up in, it needed some work. So I'm in Huntsville drive back and forth to Jackson, Mississippi, every weekend.
How far is it?
It's about 4.5 hours.
It's a serious drive.
Yeah. I mean, I probably could do the drive with my eyes closed now. You know, I've been doing it so long. It's about 10 years. So every weekend. So one good thing about my day job, it affords me a lot of opportunity and flexibility. So every other Friday I had off, or if I had a lot of leave, I might take a week off. And bought the house. It needed some updates as far as, you know, cosmetic, flooring, painting, needed a new air handler. So anyway, I ended up putting about $12,000 into the house. Bought it at 27, put about $12,000 into the house. And I guess I can break down the numbers of, you know, how I did that. So since I knew that I was going to try to invest, I was saving up money. I was really cheap. Like, like if I did go out to eat fast food, like I would, since I drove that same pickup, I wouldn't even sit in the drive thru. I didn't want it to just be idle and wasting gas. So I just walk inside. So it was, I ate the same thing every day for lunch for, you know, about 2 years. And I was able to save up a nice chunk of money, a relatively nice chunk of money to go towards the down payment. In addition to that, I found out about 401k loans. A program we have is a thrift savings plan. So it's a low interest loan that you can get. I did that. And also, I took out some of the equity into the house that I had. So just to get lined up to make sure I had cash available. And I, since, you know, I bought the house at 95, the house was worth 135. And it's a local community bank. It's actually a credit union. Essentially, if you have some equity, you stayed in the house for a number of months, really, not even a year, whatever the county appraised the value at, they will give you a line of credit up into that amount with an instant approval on it. Very low competitive interest rate on it. So I opened up all those things thinking, okay, I'm going to buy a house. When I do buy a house, I want to be aggressive at it. So that's what I was in 2015. So I got that. House was $27,000. I reached out to a local bank that will finance 75% of it. So I had to bring 25% of the down payment. And my parents didn't take a profit off of it. So I just had to pay off their loan. Then, you know, I took title. So I paid and used some of my own cash to refinance the house, even though I had these other lines of credit and others. 401k loan available just to pay the down payment and then paid everything out of pocket. And that was in April or May of 2015. Ended up, so all in, the house was 27. Put like $12,000 into, so like $40,000 house I grew up in. I was renting for like $725. I could have rented out for more, but you know, I from the beginning of this, I was thinking I want to provide quality, affordable housing. Because a lot of people in neighborhoods that I grew up in, somebody get the house for dirt cheap, don't do anything to it, and just put a tenant in and never do anything to help out the overall community. And I do not want to be that kind of guy. So that was the first one in 2015.
Definitely. Wow. That's powerful. I think one is great that you were able to kind of keep the family house, you know, upgrade it and also rent it at an affordable rate to someone in the community. And as you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of slumlords out there, you know, who will just like you said, throw somebody in there and never fix anything and have someone living in a disrepaired predicament. But, you know, I think you don't have to do that. You can still make money. You can still make a profit and provide something people can afford, provide something that's nice. You know, I think everybody, the thing we can agree, everyone deserves to live in a good place, good, clean, upgraded place. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I think the main thing I kind of think about, the people in low income areas, most of my tenants have cable. I don't have cable, but the people who have cable and stuff, they still watch HGTV. They still want nice things. They see that. So, you know, one thing by upgrading a little bit, you know, I try my best not to charge that much. I want to do charge market rate. So essentially, if there's a house going for $800 in the neighborhood and there's somewhere between $800 and $700 based on, you know, looking at comparable areas, I kind of want to be in the middle of that. But, you know, I still want to provide a good product. So once the tenants go into the house, they can say, okay, this guy's take care of it. So let me not mess it up. So that's kind of why I try to do that.
Definitely. That makes a lot of sense. And how many units do you have currently?
Let's give a little history. So in 2015, I bought that first house. Then I bought another house here in Huntsville. I'm still thinking about buying everything under, you know, out of that one podcast, I hear everything under $35,000. I bought a house for $34,000. It was owner finance. And I used my line of credit as the down payment. So really it was a line of credit. I'm not sure if that you count that as cash out of pocket, but $34,000, all I had to do was paint it and just rent out for $600. Then I bought another house in 2015, and that one was required a significant amount of work to it. I bought the worst house in my neighborhood, essentially. And I was still going back and forth to Jackson to do that. So the other houses were being or renting out, making some income. But I bought a house for $7,000. Ended up putting about $35,000 into it, and that includes new plumbing, did new electrical. The biggest thing in Mississippi, they have the soil, they call it some Yazoo clay or something. But anyway, a lot of properties have bad foundation issues. So we jacked the house up. Didn't know when you jack a house up, you'll mess the roof up. And you'll mess up a lot of the sheetrock in the house. The house had termites. But I was like, you know, I'm trying to buy the hood, I'm buy the block, as they say. I was really trying to do that. Like the house had been, it was a slumber condition when I was a kid. So, you know, I was driving my bike in the neighborhood at 5 or 6. It looked bad. So I was thinking, okay, 20 plus years later, I'm going to be the buyer to come buy my block. Anyway, long story short, I got the house, I bought cash, and I really put all cash into the house. So at $40,000, I didn't have that much money. So I was kind of broke at the time. But anyway, I got through it, pushed through it, got it rented out. And then I bought some more, about two more houses in 2016. So that put me at, you know, six doors, and I'm still, you know, five rental properties and the house. Now I'm currently my primary residence at the time, I was renting it out. So I had enough money to, you know, the house rent out that bedroom, it covered the mortgage essentially.
Wow.
So that was six in 2015. But I do want to tell you the story, the two properties I bought in 2016, while I was doing that big rehab of, you know, the house that I bought for $7,000, I was taking pictures. I really wasn't posting that much on Instagram or anything like that, but I was just keeping a journal of it just so I can see. Because I didn't believe I could get it rehabbed. It was really bad condition. I didn't believe in myself at the time, so I just kept pushing through. Anyway, while I was doing this, I had a guy renting out of the bedroom of my house, and I showed him what was going on, and he was like, "Yeah, wow, you're doing stuff like on HGTV." I was like, "Yeah, well, not making that type of money, because even though I bought the house at $7,000, I put, you know, $34,000, $35,000 into it, However, you didn't have that much equity in it because of the there weren't many comps. It's not that many jobs. It's not that big of demand. So I really had to hold on to the property. So I was just burying $40,000 into a house, which, you know, I essentially, as one of my friend's dad said, Tim, you bought you a lesson. that's what I did. Still got the house today. It's doing okay. But however, back to the main story is I was showing the guy what I was doing, and he said that he put an offer on a house that was a short sale, and also he was looking for a new primary residence. And I was like, well, how are you going to get two mortgages? Because I asked, like, what was the price of the house that was a short sale? And it was like, it's like $100,000. You know, if you're doing a short sale, you got to be willing to short sales don't work. There's nothing short about them. So you're going to have that money, have access to the money, and make sure you're not tying it up for until whenever you're able to close. And then you get a primary residence. You're going to have some type of down payment. And he told me that for the short sale, he offered $100,000 cash. And I was like, and then he said, yeah. So I was like, okay, so what are you going to do for the primary residence you're looking for? He said, yeah, I was just going to put 25% down. So I was like, you're renting out a room for me? Yeah, you have that much cash available. And so I was like, well, I got other opportunities. I got my other deals coming along. So anyway, he worked on the two props I bought in 2016. He became a private lender for me. He funded the whole deal. I think he had some extra cash. So the guy was really good. And stocks and stuff. So he wanted some money that was better than bonds. So I think we ended up buying two properties in Huntsville for $24,000 a piece. He funded the whole thing. I had to come up with the rehab money. But again, I was broke at the time. So I used credit cards to really fix up that last house. But, you know, I still wanted to provide a good product even here in Huntsville. So I had at the time, so six units, so three houses in here, and three houses in one neighborhood in Huntsville, my primary residence, and in those two, and in Jackson. So six units, 2016. I didn't buy anything else really until January 2018. I had a lot of credit card debt, and I was trying to see, did I really want to do this? Would I want to go down this path? And I spent a lot of time. I took a bodybuilding and then worked on my spiritual, my mental health, and all the other stuff too. And then get myself ready. I was ready to get married, so I know I need to just work on myself, you know. Went to counseling for, like, personal issues, and I would definitely recommend, you know, black guys, black people in general, you know, it's okay to go to counseling, you know, talk to. I think about it as, you know, one person called this as a hooker for your emotions. So sorry for how bad that sounds, but it's worth talking to people. So anyway, at that time, you know, getting myself spiritually and mentally ready, it allows me for what happened in 2018 and 19. So again, how many doors? So that's six properties. And then, okay, 2018 in my neighborhood. Let me know if I'm taking too much time. Okay. And so 2018, I was driving by a house and I was just calling it, you know, every day. I mean, not every day, every week or every other week, at least once a month. Luckily, somebody answered the phone for me, and I was like, okay. So they told me that, you know, they're trying to sell the house. So the house was the worst house in the neighborhood by far. No one had lived in it for several years. It was a bad shape. It had a tree laying on the roof. But next to that was another house that was in decent shape. They'd been on the market for about almost a year. And so I knew that I was working on this one deal in the house next to it. They wanted 130 at the beginning of the process when it first came on market. And I was like, that's a little too high. So still driving by, I drive this path to work every day, looking at it. And then I knew this other one was going to come down. So I was like, okay, so let me put an offering on this. So they ended up going from 130. I got it down to 115 or something. And knowing that my house was worth 135 in that neighborhood. So I knew it had some equity, but not that much. But the main thing, the main prize was the house next door. If I can control two assets side by side. So anyway, I ended up buying the house and I put the whole house on Airbnb. And this was the one that was on the market for a year. Put the whole house on Airbnb. Wasn't sure if that was going to work. So actually, I told the lender that I was going to live in the house because I had all intentions to do that. However, back in my primary residence, so I would rent out one bedroom. I just rent out my master bedroom. So I was renting out one room in my house for $650 or $600. So anyway, I was making $1,300 while living in the house in Huntsville, which is so I was like, let me just go to live in this house. And then I'm put on Airbnb. If somebody book it, I just go sleep in the extra room that's in my other house. I can just walk over to my other house. And so put on Airbnb. And at this time, you know, I had got back with my current, my wife now. And so she had been doing Airbnb. I had got her to do an Airbnb while we were dating. So we were like, let's just run this whole house and see, can we provide a whole house on Airbnb? If we just did the numbers at the per diem rate in Huntsville of $90 a night, if we could just hit 60% occupancy, 70% occupancy, we can make a profit. Or we can just, we know a model that does work is renting out by room, which we could do $600 a night for this 3-bedroom house. So that was the model we tried to do. But come to find out, that worked. People were attracted to it. And I thought I was going to live in the house, but it wasn't vacant that long. So I was just sleeping in my house in my small office while I'm renting out that house for $1,300 a night. Got this other house on Airbnb, and the house that I was trying to reach out to multiple times, I actually closed on it. So the house I bought at 115, I bought it in January. The house next door, I paid $20,000 for it, but it needed a significant amount of work. So got that going, found some contractors, got the house fixed up. Long story short, I think we put 45 into the house, renting out on Airbnb. I think we're doing between 1,800 and 2,000 a month. But we're not doing nightly rentals. We're normally doing they would call it executive kind of stays. So most people staying over 30 days. But at the end of the year, the house was appraised at like 145. So at Huntsville lately has seen a lot of appreciation. So we kind of rode on that. So that's what, 7 and 8. And then in 2018, after I finished that big rehab, that's when I met, I was on Bigger Pockets a lot. I didn't like my job at the time. I was on Bigger Pockets. And anytime somebody said anything about Huntsville, I would chime in. So this is my opinion. This is what I think. So I didn't necessarily know it, but it's like in the software development world, which, you know, my day job, a lot of people say, if you can teach something, it's the best way of learning. So that's why I was, you see me a lot on Bigger Pockets trying to help people out in Huntsville. As I'm teaching, like, okay, yeah. And then somebody else chimes in, like, okay, they're right. Okay, let me add this to my arsenal, what things to say about Huntsville. And a guy reached out to me. He slid into my DMs on Bigger Pockets saying he's buying houses in the same area I am, 35805. But he has lending lined up. He has the properties lined up, but he doesn't have contracting at the time, like somebody to rehab, reposition the property. At the time, I had just finished that big rehab of putting $45,000 into a house that was $20,000. And that house was really bad. We essentially rebuilt the first floor, had to put a new roof on it, painted it. It was significant rehab. So I was like, I'm fresh out. I can figure this out. I could do it. And so 2018. In addition to that, he said that he was interested in doing private money. So I had started to ramp up my marketing, my direct mail. And one thing about my direct mails, I look at properties that are kind of next door to where I'm already at. I really like that. I like staying in the same neighborhood because my property manager stays low. I don't plan on quitting my job for, you know, foreseeable future, at least not until I'm like 40. So I marketed to the next house next door. I got a call. So the guy DM me on Bigger Pockets. I called him while I was going to an appointment. And so I got the house under contract. I was like, okay, how am I going to fund it? After having a conversation. So anyway, the guy funded it. I started work getting a crew on his house together to position this. Because I had a handyman the whole time that did smaller jobs. He couldn't really handle the workload. Actually, in Huntsville, which is different than any market. I mean, I haven't been to most, but, you know, between San Antonio, Huntsville, and Jackson, Mississippi, people don't really have to work that hard here.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast. That's B-R-E-D Podcast. Until next time.